So it is here, and we go back. We are in the middle of Tehillim Pei Aleph, which we all know. It's the Lamnatzeach Gitit Lasef. It's the Shir Shel Yom for Thursday, and it's all about Rosh Chodesh and Tiku B'Chodesh Shofar, Rosh Hashanah rather, Tiku B'Chodesh Shofar. And then it switches to Edut B'Yosef Shamo. Hashem placed this testimony within Yosef. We talked about this being one of the Tehillim that are aimed at Yosef, in the sense of the northern half of Israel, that they're part of the community as well. And here we go. we talked about Hasiroti, Sebel Shechmo, and I took the burden from his shoulder, and Hirsch said that, so therefore, Kapami Duv Tavorna, therefore I'm going to support Bnei Israel, in this physical sense of Yosef. And therefore, Kapab Midu Tavora, so he can take his hand away, where her translation is from the pot. Don't worry so much about the food. You concentrate on the spiritual side, God will take care of the physical, make sure you're fed. But Sarah Karata, you called out in pain, Bechatzach, and I save you, and Chab Seter Aim, I answered you, and I translate that in the thunderous silence. The secret of thunder. The idea of the shofar representing the wordless cry. We don't know how to say it. When he says, Sifat lo yadati eshma, Hashem listens to the language of I don't understand. That's what the shofar is. We don't know how to express our needs. Hashem said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And then it ended with Avancha amei Meriva. We talked about that. Hashem is saying, I test you at the waters of Meriva, which is where Moshe was tested.
Danny, can I just say one thing about that? Of not knowing how to express yourself?
Uh-huh.
In Israel, when they were in Mitzrayim, they God heard their tzaka. They couldn't even pray. But the only way they could say they still had hope was to cry out in pain. That was their prayer. And God
yes. heard. Right. And that's what I'm saying, that they weren't so much praying, it's tzakatam, just crying out. And that was there. Too. God's promising to hear that as well. And as I said, the connection with Meim Riva is the leadership side of it. That Bnei Yisrael, that Moshe, Meim Riva, where Moshe was tested and failed as a leader. The people called out, they want water, and he got angry with them and hit the rock and all. Everything that went through that, he wasn't the appropriate leader. Hashem is reassuring, even with that, I will still support you. Yes, things will fail. As Rashi puts it on that pasuk, Vancha Meim Riva, V'afal Pisha Goli Bachon Lefana, even though I'm fully aware, you will rebel against Meim Riva, you will fail there. I will still save you, Achalsa. I will still support you. That's why the Mechilta reads this. And that ends with a Sela.
Rock.
Hold that thought. Here we go. Let's look at what Safraya translated as a technical musical term, probably showing a situation, pause, or interruption. That's why. I translate it as from the same with Salot, just to pave a path. So musically, it probably means some kind of musical interlude. Poetically, it's the hold that thought. We're going to move this.
I always thought Salot was like the end of something. I didn't realize it was like a break, not the end.
I would read it that way. I mean, it's not obvious what it means because there's no translation. It's taken as a word meaning forever in later Hebrew poetry. So when you use it in tefillah, it always means forever, ongoing. But again, it's from that same root of salot to pave a path, to make a path. Sulusudera. And Phyllis would like to mention Simon Garfunkel's "The Sound of Silence," which sounds right, but I don't know the words well enough to know whether it really fits in here or not.
Well, it might be like a dramatic pause.
Okay.
You know, they stop in music. They'll have a stop, and then they keep going or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Presumably, these are all sung. But this is part one. This is now part two, where he gets to, okay, Hashem has promised, I will hear you. I will support you. That's great. And now, this is an edut b'Yosef Samo. I place this edut in your testimony. Now, here's your responsibility. Shema ani v'edabach. Listen, my people, and I will testify to you. Again, continuation of this idea of Edut. Israel, Tishmali, oh Israel, if you just listen to me. This is God talking to himself. Lo yevacha el zar. There should be no strange God among you. V'shachavela el acher. And don't bow down to strange gods, strange powers. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God, Amalcha Me'eretz Yisrael, who took you out of Egypt. Harcha picha amalehu, open your mouth and I will fill it. So those two psukim there, Liyavacha Elzar and Anochi Hashem Elokecha, sound like a repeat of the first two dibrot. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, she'ratziti ticha me'eretz Yisrael, same thing, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Hamalcha Me'eretz Yisrael. And lo yelecha Elohim acherim al panai, lo yelecha el zar. Now, these are commandments about avodah zara, serve God. But the parent doesn't have anything to do with avodah zara. Right? There's no sense of what is going wrong here. You know, there's nothing here of what you're doing wrong is serving false gods. The only hint of anything wrong was Moshe Memriva getting angry with the people. So the Gemara says that's what lo yelecha el zar actually refers to. It's not really about avodah zara. What is b'cha el zar? This is the Gemara in Shabbos. So it's talking about what you can or can't do on Shabbos, and it's talking about the malacha of tearing.
The malacha of what?
Tearing, ripping.
Okay.
You can't sew, you can't tear, but the rule of Shabbos is that the only time something is actually technically forbidden is if it's for a purpose. So tearing in order to make something, I'm cutting pieces. That's technically the Isser of Kriya on Shabbos. So it asks about what if you're really mad and you rip your clothes because you're mad. And it says, well, maybe that's therapeutic. That's really is for a purpose there. Should that be forbidden on Shabbos? Is that being over? Okay, so yes, Kai Gavna, in this manner, the Kropika Dabachemak. I'm just gonna tear something just out of I'm so mad I gotta break something. Is that okay on Shabbos? Mishari, are you allowed to do that at all? Gemara goes back. What do you mean? It's therapeutic. It has a purpose, and therefore I might consider it something that's other Shabbos. You're not supposed to do that at all. But Tanya, we have the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mishum Khalifa bar Agra, Shamar Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay, he said these things. Makareb gadol b'chamato. Someone who tears clothing in anger. Mishaber kelav b'chamato, and breaks dishes in anger. And throws away money in anger. You're so furious, just whatever you're doing, just destroying things out of fury. It's like serving avodah zara. Because that's the way the yetzer hara works. At first, you're just losing control enough to be angry. It's just a little thing, but because the next day it's going to be something worse and it's going to build it from there. He's going to go do it. That losing control and anger is a bad thing that's going to lead to avodah zara. It's a terrible thing. Amar Rabbi Avin, Maikra. Rabbi Avin says, well, do you have a pasuk for that? It's a nice statement. We'd like to see some kind of support for this comment. And the answer is, lo yevacha el zar. Lo tshachavel el acher. Don't let there be, they translate b'cha meaning literally in you. Right? Lo yebacha el zar doesn't mean there should be no strange gods among you. They're reading it as there should be no strange power within you. This is within you. Should be in control of yourself. Your strange powers in your body should not be in control of you. What's that strange power? This is the yetzer hara that leads to that. So I read this pasuk as again connecting to the problem of Mei Meriva. Of getting angry, because as soon as you get angry, you lose control, and then everything goes downhill from there.
But Danny, I think that's a little difficult when we're always taught, you know, God created Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer HaRa.
Right? It is difficult.
We have it within us, too. And then he's saying we shouldn't have it within us. Of course, that's very nice, but it's hard to say, no, I never lose it, you know.
Right? The fact that it's hard doesn't mean you're not supposed to do it. It is hard. And yes, that's the point about even though yes, we will fail sometimes. Never an excuse not to try.
No, but the fact that you may fail doesn't mean that you're not trying.
Right, I agree.
It sounds like what the concern is acting on it, not feeling it. It's the actually tearing and breaking.
Yes, but I mean, I think the second part of that, Phil, Janet is right, is that, you know, there are points where you're going to fail. Okay, realize, okay, that's a failure. We're going to move back from there. It's like quitting smoking. I talk to parents all the time about this. It counts as quitting, even if it only lasts for a day and you fall back. Not that you failed, you quit, and now you're going to do it again. That's okay. And this next time you'll quit for 2 days. That's good.
No, but we're saying Moshe failed when in fact he probably had this breaking point and, you know, it wasn't his best day.
That was a right. That was in fact a failure, and you had to go from there and deal with consequences and move on. But I don't think we're disagreeing here about this, but I think it's important to realize this idea that Lo Yebacha El Zar is something that's in you, and it's gonna lead to worse things. It's reading that as that anger. Get control of yourself. That's the number one step. Again, this isn't meant to be a religious kind of tehillim. It's a personal and interpersonal one. Ah. It's consistently this thing. And then Hashem continues in the Perek, Lo Shema Ami B'Koli, and my people didn't listen to me. This is, again, this God talking to himself. And my people just refuse to listen. I just say, oh, okay, well, just get your control. And I open your mouth and I will put the food into it. Yisrael Lo Avali, and people didn't want me. So therefore, I let them do what they want. Let them deal with the consequences of their own actions. They're not going to listen. They will see that. I will send them into that which their hearts saw. And they will go according to their own advice. And you'll see what happens. And that's how you deal with teenagers, right? Let them deal with the consequences of their own actions. And Rocky's back. Hi, Rocky. Hi. You're on video. Lua mi shomea li, says it again. If only my people listen to me, Yisrael b'darchai alechu, and Yisrael would walk in my ways. And we've talked about b'darchai alechu is the imitating God in Matat Yodei. That's the Mishnah Torah here in Source 88. V'lachta b'darchav, go in the ways of Hashem. Hach limdu b'perish mitzvah zu, this is the mitzvah. Ma hu nikra chanun achatahu chanun. Yisrael b'darchai alechu specifically talks about being chanun and rachum. Mahu nikra chanun atayya rachum. Hashem says, if that was the case, if you did that, kimat oyvehem achnia, I would eliminate their enemies. I would humble their enemies in a moment. Baltzareya mashiv yadi, I would place my hand on their foes. Misanei Hashem michach shulo, those who hate God or lying to him, be'itam lo'olam, and that consequence will be with them forever. I will save God, say, I will save you. Well, just have faith.
Sorry, just something on the Ben Adam Lamakom and Ben Adam L'Chayro. I mean, even the fact that it's about, you know, you get angry, the risk is that you're going to, you know, look for a Kelzar, right? I mean, that's Ben Adam Lamakom. It shouldn't be my hurt people. What?
Say it as Elzar.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that's right. Let's say Elzar. Elzar. Yeah. But I mean, really what I would worry about is, you know, if you're taking it out on your dishes, the next thing is you're going to take it out on people. You know, that's what you really worry about.
I think that's right. It's not, you're not ending up in this Avodah Zar rejecting everything step. That's the next step is going to be on people. I agree. And that's the anger there. And that's really what this focus is. And Misanei Hashem Yichach Hashulo. Those who hate God will deny him. And they'll have to deal with that forever, those consequences forever. And I think that's the last step, that we end up with this breaking the Bena Adam L'Chavera, we end up with the animal come and losing everything. And Hashem ends with a promise, Vayachle Michel Kita, and I would feed him from the fat of the wheat, Mitzur Devash Asbiyeka, and then switches to second person, from him to you. I will satisfy you with honey from the rock. We'll get the bees growing in there. All the sweet things will come out of rocks, sort of echoing name Riva and the water from the rock. The things will be fine. That's all I'm asking you to do.
So this whole sword thing is really a reference back to hitting the rock of name Riva?
No? I think so. That's, you know, the Mitzur Chalamish from Halel. It's certainly the idea that Hashem is supporting us out of things that apparently are impossible to provide. But don't worry about it. You have your job. You don't get angry with other people, and Hashem will provide. And we'll get back to this. The idea that Hashem is the Ro'eh of Yisrael. And going back to this, the whole thing is about Rosh Hashanah. That's the way this parak is dealing with Rosh Hashanah. That we don't have to be afraid of Yom HaDin. Hashem will judge, we'll have the consequences of that, but Hashem will provide for us in the end. So we can start with our parak with Harinu L'Elokim, Uzenu. We can sing to God on the Yom HaDin, because we're celebrating. This will work out. And that's this parak here. And that's these two parakim here of Pei Aleph, which was talking about Eduk B'Yosef Samo, and the Perek Pei, the previous one, which is about the Roi Yisrael, Lifnei Ephraim Binyaminu Menashe. Again, addressed to the Yosef side. We talked about that in the context of our parak in Shmuel, which is where David's trying to pull the nation back together again. That this division that had been there from the time of B'nai Rachel, B'nai Leah. But you want to put this 500, 600 years before, was always there in Israeli society. David's trying to pull it back together. Absalom shatters it, and now he barely pulls it back together again, and we'll see the rest of Sefer Shmuel deals with the fact that it doesn't hold together. And we're leading into Malachim, where the nation will split. Stop with this here. And if you're interested, I had mentioned this book to Susie. We can do a quick book review. There you go, Secret Book of Kings. Anyone else read this? Because it's relevant.
Oh, Yochi, she just came out with a new book called The Orchard. I guess it's
not that new, yeah. But it, so, yeah.
Oh, so it's not so new? I thought that was new.
I don't know how new it is. It's been out for a bit. Now, she's Israeli. So these are all English translations of her books, which have been out for a while in Israel. This one is 2015, I think. I don't remember. The Orchard is a historical novel based on the life of Rabbi Akiva.
Is that about four people enter the parties?
Right. That's where the title comes from. This one is basically telling the story of Sefer Shmuel, early Sefer Malachim, from the point of view of B'nai Yosef, B'nai Binyamin.
Is it good?
It is good. I have some issues with it. I mean, basically, it's like, you know, it's taking the stories there, which are all very, you know, David's wonderful, and basically switching around so that David is the villain and Shaul is the hero. And you can do that. I mean, there are lots of places where David comes out bad. She has to push a little bit to say that what we have in Sefer Shmuel was made up. Like, Shaul really didn't consult the witch of Endor, and that Shaul was the one who got the Aron back.
The review said it's seen through the eyes of Michal. That's interesting.
Well, okay, so that's right. So basically, Michal is one of the narrators. There are two narrators through it. It reads, again, this is the English translation. It reads as a juvenile, as a young adult novel. The primary narrator is a kid who grows up under mysterious circumstances, finds his true destiny. I mean, the same plot as every young adult novel. And it's very earnest. You know, the good guys are all good, the bad guys are all bad. And it's so. And I don't know how much of that is from the translation, whether she writes it more sophisticated than that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But it's always worth reading. You just get this different perspective, because I think it's very possible to read the story, and even read directly without changing things, which she does, to read the stories in Shmuel and Malachim directly as being a power play by Yehuda and David. You know, and what is that Shaul, and then Michal, and then he goes into Yerovim ben Nevat, who splits the kingdom. So in order to make this work, she's got to confuse Binyamin and Ephraim. Yes. So Shaul is Binyamin, Michal is Binyamin, and then Yerovim ben Nevat is from Ephraim, and Binyamin ends up with Yehuda. So that's one major thing she's got to switch. She has to say, no, that was a lie. That actually, in this book, Binyamin stays with the north. And we talked about that. She's got, like I said, it's,
so there's a lot of literary license here.
There is, but again, being out, and you know, it's a historical novel, so it's, you have to know the original story in order to get, you know, you have that little note of recognition. Oh, I know who that is, and oh, that's a different way of looking at it. I think it's worth having a different way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. So that's good. She has one brilliant comment, which I didn't think about at all. But we'll give her credit for that. And I don't know if that's hers or she saw somewhere else. But talking about David's wives, David's on the run. So Michal loves him and then is betrayed. That's the way that basically it's said over here. And so Michal ends up hating him. But if you look at, if we remember, what was the name of Shaul's wife?
Did we ever know Shaul's wife's name?
Yeah, this is, I am put up on the screen. This is.
Has a shin, right? Has what? A big shin. Shin is prominent, no?
Not that I know about.
No?
Yeah, this is Shmuel Aleph Perak Yudalid and has all of Shaul's kids. Yubidei Shaul, Yonatan Yishvi, Malki Shua, Shem Shdevanav, Shem Vichira Meirav, Shem Katana Michal. The Shem Isha Shaul, Noam Bani Achimatz.
Oh, okay, no.
Okay, so that's the answer. I got text in there. He also has a Pilegas called Ritzpa, who also comes up in the novel quite prominently. But what's the name of David's first wife after Michal, right?
He's Abigail.
Right. That's the first is Abigail, right? So after he runs away, he ends up with the story of Abigail, and that's here in Shmuel Perek Chafei. And that's the whole story of Abigail. And Naval and the whole death of Naval, and then he marries someone else. One liner at the end of the story of Abigail. Yeah, let's see. Here we go. Abigail goes, gets on her donkey, commission her tail, goes with five of her maidens. She goes with the messenger David, and she marries David. And then he marries someone else named Machinoam. We know no story
about that. Same woman?
Well, it can't be the same woman because she's married to Shaul, but we know nothing about her. But he makes the point, makes the point that marrying the wife of the king is a sign of saying that I'm king.
Yeah.
That's what Absalom does by taking David's concubines. That's what basically what Reuven does by taking Bilhah. That's what Abner is accused of doing in the house of Ishbosheth, of taking Ritzpah, as a way of claiming that. He says that, well, that what he's that this, in fact, is the same thing. This is David symbolically marrying the wife of Shaul by taking a wife named Achinoam. He's saying, I'm going to be king, and that. I think it's a very clever idea. There's no support for it whatsoever anywhere else, but the coincidence of the name. So I thought that was have a nice touch in the novel.
So you're saying it's the same person, or it's
not the same person. I'm just saying it's a symbolic thing. Right. I wouldn't make too much of that if I thought it was very clever. And the book has a lot of clever things like that. A couple of the clever things that, for instance, Mephibosheth, who's Yonatan's son, is actually one of Shaul's sons. The name comes up that. We know that in Divrei Yomim, all the names that start in Shmuel have Boshet in them are actually Baal. We've talked about that. Like Ishboshet is called Ishbaal. Yeruvaal in Shoftim is called Yeruvoshet. When we change the name Baal to something meaning embarrassment, they're like censor the names. So she has, actually it's not Mifi Baal, it's actually Mipiel as the name, and that the Judean authors switch it to Baal to make it more embarrassing to the family of Shaul. That one I wasn't quite sure about that one. I mean, she's got a lot of little things in there. My biggest complaint about it is the fact that the worst thing that David does, the one that makes him absolutely evil, especially if you're looking at this conflict between Beit Shaul and Beit David, is in Perchaf Gimel. Perchaf Bet, is that right? No. When there's a famine, we mentioned this before. There's a famine. And he asks why, and he says it's because Shaul killed the Gibonim. And David goes to Gibbonim and say, what can I do to make it up for you? After, you know, we don't know exactly what happened with Gibbonim. We'll have to deal with
it. Oh, yeah, and they kill the seven children of Shaul. Right.
And then so they say, we want the seven, and they say, we want the seven children of Shaul. And he takes the children of Ritzpah bat Ayah, Asher Dal Shaul. So Ritzpah, who's his Shaul's second wife, and he has the names here, Amoni, Poshe, and Chab, right? The two children of Ritzpah he takes, and Chamesh Bnei Michal bat Shaul, Asher Yaldala Adriel, and five of Michal's basically adopted daughters, actually Merav's daughters, we'll talk about that, and he gives them to Gibbonim and they're killed. It's terrible. It's just awful. And then Ritzpah sits there and sits by their bodies until they can be buried for months. Ritzpah is like the hero of the story and understanding what happened with David. And clearly that's like she makes in the novel, makes that a breaking point, blaming David for having slaughtered the remaining family of Shaul. But she does it in one page. Like she blows it. She just, instead of, you know, and not, you're supposed to show, not tell. So this is just she has one page, David does this, and then Michal's angry. So, no, that should be like chapters here. That should be the center of the book. So I was disappointed in that side of it. It doesn't quite show David's, she has to make up things about David doing wrong when we've got more in the text where we can pull that better. But anyway, an interesting book.
Wow. Thanks, Danny.
You can read that. I will stop.
Everybody know there's a shiur at 10:30. Al Ziegler.
Yes.
Oh.
On Zoom from Rabbi Shulman sent it out. Did everybody get that?
Oh.
Even last night he sent out another reminder, so check your emails.
Janet, could you send it to me?
I'll try, yeah.
Jack is a member, but I'm not a member.
Oh, you don't get the emails?
All right, yeah. I think
I could get on the list, even if I'm
not. I'm forwarding it. 1 second.
What, Dave?
Hold on a second. I'm clicking forward. Let's see if I have her address in my address book.
Phil says it's reminiscent of Antigone.
Phyllis.
I don't remember, but she also watches over the bodies. Right. Yeah, I think that it should have been a major part of this novel. I think I kept waiting for it in the book, and it just didn't happen right.
That was just... Are you getting it, Phyllis?
No. Did I get it? Hold on.